COVID cases and hospitalizations are still climbing in the state, though fortunately the number of deaths is not spiking in the same way. On Insight, three county health directors on what they're learning about transmission and whether the governor's mask order is being enforced. Danette York from Butte County, Carla Haas from El Dorado County, and Ryan Groover from Nevada County will join me. Then Sacramento writer and poet Indigo Moore checking in from Philadelphia. He says, in this time since George Floyd's death, he's learning as much as he's contributing, and he's written a piece titled Letter to Sacramento, a Riotous Anodyne. Later in the hour, the Social Distance Theater. In the parking lot at 25th and R in Sacramento, a live performance on July 4th and eight more Saturdays after that. Organizer Ray Tatter has the details, and that's The Uplift. I'm Beth Ruriak, hosting again from home today. Insight is next.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A federal prosecutor is set to tell Congress that political favoritism influenced the case against presidential advisor Roger Stone. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports a lawyer will testify that higher-ups pressured him to cut Stone a break in his criminal case.
Aaron Zielinski says he's never seen political considerations factor in a criminal case until the prosecution of Roger Stone, a longtime confidant of President Trump. Zielinski will tell the House Judiciary Committee that people at the highest levels of the Justice Department overrode his work for political reasons. In prepared testimony, he says supervisors were afraid of President Trump, and they warned Zielinski he could lose his job if he refused to go along with a lighter punishment for Stone. Another Justice Department lawyer will tell lawmakers politics infused two sets of investigations in the antitrust division. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
In a win for the president, a federal appeals court is directing a lower court judge to drop a criminal case against Michael Flynn. The DOJ had asked that the case be dismissed. Flynn, who stepped down as Trump's first national security advisor after only a month, had pleaded guilty to lying to investigators during the special counsel's probe into Russia election interference. He later pursued a scorched earth legal strategy in accusing the FBI of entrapment. After a pandemic-related delay, Russia has held a massive military parade celebrating the former Soviet Union's role in defeating Nazi Germany. President Vladimir Putin was there. Here's NPR's Lucian Kim.
This year's parade featured 14,000 military personnel, hundreds of vehicles, and a flyover of warplanes. President Putin has made Victory Day Russia's main holiday. He said Russians will always remember that the Soviet people crushed Nazism. Although the Soviet Union was allied with the US, Britain, and France in World War II, Putin has resisted criticism of decisions made at the time by the Soviet leadership. Foreign dignitaries at the parade included the leaders of several former Soviet republics. Originally, Putin had hoped President Trump and other Western leaders would attend. Lucian Kim, NPR News, Moscow.
Bubba Wallace, NASCAR's sole African-American driver, is remaining vocal about racism, even as federal authorities are now saying it was a coincidence that a noose was found hanging in his stall recently. We have more from NPR's Tom Goldman.
He's out there on the tracks wearing an I Can't Breathe t-shirt. He's got Black Lives Matter written on his number 43 car. He's galvanized fellow white drivers who become engaged, and they made a dramatic video calling for the Confederate flag ban. Now, with all that dramatic change, there are a lot of people within NASCAR really angry, disgusted about what happened.
That's NPR's Tom Goldman reporting. The Dow is down more than 700 points. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from DuckDuckGo, a privacy company committed to making privacy online simple. Used by millions, they offer private search and tracker blocking with one download. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
It's 9:04 with Cap Radio News. I'm Steve Milne. Electric trucks could be a common sight on California roads if state air officials and clean air advocates get their way this week. Cap Radio's Ezra David Romero explains.
The California Air Resources Board wants 300,000 electric trucks in the state by 2035. The board is voting Thursday. Environmental and health advocates have their fingers crossed. Anthony Victoria is with the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice. He says this would be a big deal for the health of people in places like the Inland Empire.
We get upwards to about 20 to 25,000 trucks a day in this region. Not to mention that we have some of the worst air quality in the nation.
He says more often than not, black and brown communities bear the brunt of pollution from trucks. Even though the rule won't begin until 2024, Chris Shimoda with the California Trucking Association says this could be hard to implement during the pandemic because businesses are struggling.
What we're really looking for is, I think, a small-scale success rather than a large-scale failure.
But environmental groups say this is just one step of many more to come in improving the state's air quality. Ezra David Romero, CAP Radio News.
People who live in the city of Dos Palos in Merced County won't have water for several days after the town's water treatment plant became clogged with algae. The water outage started Monday when the city declared a water emergency and urged the town's 5,000 residents to use only boiled tap water for drinking and cooking to avoid stomach or intestinal illness. Crews are working to install a temporary filtration system. More news at capradio.org.
From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. I'm hosting again from home today, so thank you to our engineering and technical teams for making it all so workable. California is one of five states now setting records in COVID-19 cases. Johns Hopkins University data says there were almost 6,800 positive COVID cases since yesterday morning. That's 238 cases higher than the day before. And COVID hospitalizations in California apparently hit an all-time high on Sunday. There were 3,702 people in the hospital. Almost 1,200 of them were in the ICU. It's important to know that the majority of these cases are in Southern California and the Central Valley. However, CNN is reporting that New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are going to require 14-day quarantines for travelers from states with high COVID-19 rates. It doesn't list the states. It's easy to assume that California would be in that list. Also, by the way, we have quite a runners community, and New York's marathon was canceled as of this morning, along with the Berlin marathon, too. So the news continues at the statewide and national level, globally, of course, in this pandemic, but much of the COVID response happens at the county level, with leaders making decisions about COVID testing and contact tracing, about how much to reopen the economy, and then whether to enforce the governor's face mask order. So we thought we'd find out how some of those decisions are going. On the phone is Danette York, the public health director in Butte County. Hi, Danette. It's good to have you back on Insight.
Hi, Beth. Thank you for having me here.
How many active COVID cases do you have in the county right now?
Well, we update our dashboard daily around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And yesterday, when we updated our dashboard, it was at 111 cases. I can tell you that this morning, which has not been updated on the dashboard yet, we are just above 120. So cases continued to be notified. We continued to receive notification of cases late into yesterday evening after the dashboard was updated.
I believe you've had a single day high total for the pandemic. So as these numbers are moving, how concerned are you about these increases?
It's definitely a public health concern. It's also an economic concern. You know, we have started opening up our county. We were one of the first ones to get a state variant to be able to move into our stage two. We're now into stage three somewhat, and everyone is grateful, and well, not everyone, but most people are grateful, want the economy opened back up, but it also causes concern because as people move about more, we will see more spread.
What are your thoughts now about opening when you did and at the pace that you did in Butte County?
I still think that it's good. We are monitoring our metrics very closely, as well as the State Department of Health is also monitoring metrics to ensure that we do not reach a threshold that would maybe trigger either slowing down opening up or maybe even tightening things back up somewhat if we need to. The most important thing for us is to try to continue to encourage the public to follow the mitigation efforts and pay attention to their own network, so to speak, the social distancing and participating in the face covering mandate, and making sure that they're not going out more than they should, still avoiding gatherings and close contacts with people.
Danette, what is the threshold that might make you consider tightening down on some of the reopenings or not progressing farther? Is there criteria?
There's not really a trigger, so to speak. There's thresholds that the state has put in place to watch as far as like the number of cases that we have or the number of hospitalizations. None of those would require us to close anything back up, but it would start a conversation on what really is happening, what is the data showing us, and start considering if there's anything we can change that would make a difference.
So from contact tracing, you know something about transmission. What's the picture there? What do you, especially about these newer cases that are coming in at a quicker rate?
Well, we know that community transmission is active. We know it's here, and that's consistent with what other counties in the state are seeing and reporting as well. However, we have seen a lot of these newer cases are coming in as very close household contacts, or even close contacts, meaning where they work. It's, again, we know community transmission is here, but we are tying a lot of the new cases back to cases that we already knew about previously as well.
When you say close household contacts, that to me doesn't say party or event in the home or having people over. It sounds like just members of a family where somebody was exposed and either didn't know it or had already exposed others.
That is correct. There is a lot of transmission that is occurring with people that don't know they have it, so are asymptomatic, or they may have spread it before they started seeing symptoms or feeling symptoms. And so people need to be vigilant and need to be careful. And then there's also, it's difficult to isolate yourself from your family within your home. So, there are ways to do it, and there's education that we provide to help people. But it's difficult, and it's hard to be away from your family. And in some cases, there are large households living in a medium to smaller size home. And so it's very difficult to keep that space between everyone.
Is that a few steps away from saying that even within a family, perhaps it would be wise to wear masks or face coverings in the house at home?
Yeah, I think that's not the case. If there is a positive COVID patient in the home, we recommend that the patient wear a mask and the person caring for them wear a mask, but not necessarily everyone unless they are in the same room with that person.
All right. What about masks and the enforcement or not of the governor's directive? What's Butte County doing?
I think Butte County is probably doing very similar things to what everyone else is doing, which is continued education on what is a face covering, how it's effective, and what it will help to do during this pandemic. Enforcement is difficult at best, sometimes impossible. We don't see any specific type of enforcement being put into place for face coverings, but we continue to highly encourage people to use them anytime they're in a common area or around people that are outside of their household unit.
Okay, Danette, one more question, different topic, but what about fireworks? Tell me about the rules, the concerns. How is Butte County going to handle 4th of July?
We actually don't have any directives or guidance that has come out from the state on fireworks or fireworks displays at this time. I do know that gatherings are still not allowed, and so everyone is discouraged from, you know, participating in a gathering event to see fireworks if fireworks are displayed and they can see them from distances. Then that makes sense, but it doesn't make sense to go to one location and develop a crowd.
All right, Danette, thank you very much. Stay safe. I hope everybody has a good next week or so, and then the 4th of July weekend as well.
Thank you.
That was Danette York, the public health director in Butte County. Now we're going to Carla Haas. She's the county communication director in El Dorado County. Hi, Carla. Glad to have you back on the program.
Hi, Beth. Great to talk with you this morning.
So tell me about your county, too, with active COVID cases right now, and if you're doing anything differently because of the rising numbers.
Sure. Well, much like Butte County and much like what you're seeing across the state of California, we do have an increase in active cases. Since we've been tracking the cases in El Dorado County, we have a total of 150 confirmed cases since March. And today, we have 41 that are active cases throughout our county. The majority of those are in the Lake Tahoe region. A little more than 50% of them are in the Lake Tahoe region, and the rest of them are sprinkled throughout the county.
From contact tracing, what do you know about transmission?
Well, again, it's very similar to what Butte County is seeing, and I think that we're seeing across the state. There's community transmission that is occurring for sure. There is also, there seems to be a little bit of an uptick in cases where people are going to family gatherings that are outside their household unit, parties, baby showers, things like that, birthday parties. So we have seen an increase in those type of gatherings that have taken place and have resulted in some confirmed cases. But generally speaking, it's kind of all across the board in all the different areas. So we've got the community spread, the asymptomatic spread, the spread within a household when, you know, somebody has the flu in your home and it runs through the whole household. It's the same thing with the coronavirus. So we're seeing a lot of that, but we are seeing a little bit more in the way of gatherings of folks outside of their own household unit. But I'm happy
so
to say that...
Go ahead.
I'm happy to say that, you know, we've tested more than 10,000 of our residents, and we only have a 1.4% positivity rate. So that's good, but we do need to be diligent now, you know, to make sure that we continue that trend.
And just for perspective, health leaders want 10% or below on the positivity rate. California had been hanging at about 4.5, though that's, I believe, ticked up over 5% now. Meanwhile, the state, I think, has closed the testing site at Ponderosa High School. So is the free testing in your county now at Lake Tahoe Community College?
That's correct. We have free testing for any El Dorado County resident, any Nevada State resident, any Alpine County resident at the Lake Tahoe Community College, and you don't need to have any medical insurance to be tested there. You just need to make, you actually don't even need to make an appointment. You just need to register, and you can walk in and be tested for free. We did, the state did close the Ponderosa High School site on Monday, and it's really because these sites were developed to accommodate approximately 132 tests a day. And at the Ponderosa High School site, we were averaging between 20 and 30 a day. And the costs to run those sites per test are exorbitant. So the state made the determination that that they were going to close that site, move it somewhere else, But we do have some good news that we're working on with a possibility of some backup, which we'll know more about next week.
Okay. I do want to ask you also about masks and the enforcement about masks, and then give me a fireworks check. In your county, the risk of wildfire is incredibly tense this time of year.
It is. You're right about that. And we are, you know, COVID knows no boundaries. Fire knows no boundaries. So we are very hopeful that people will keep to the governor's guideline of no gatherings outside of your household unit and not get together and put off a bunch of fireworks and, you know, just kind of take this 4th of July a little bit differently, just like we've had to take a lot of the things this year very differently. Memorial Day was a little bit different. People had to make adjustments and some sacrifices, and we're hoping that people in El Dorado County will do the same thing in the name of not only the COVID-19 virus, but also in the name of wildfires and sparking things. It's dry up here. It's really dry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is another thing that we don't we don't need to have happen. We need to take our own personal responsibilities to ensure the health of our community, whether it's our personal health or the health of our lands. So we're looking forward to a safe 4th of July and keep our fingers crossed in that regard. And then in terms of the enforcement for the masks, you know, much like the state is not enforcing it with law enforcement activities, neither is El Dorado County. We are doing all that we can to inform our public that this is an order by the state and mandated by the governor and the California Department of Public Health, that when people are out in public and mingling around in public areas, they are to wear a face mask. And we're doing as much education as we can about that and hopeful that people will get the message and take the action.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Take care, all right?
Thanks, Beth. You too.
That's Carla Haas, the County Communication Director in El Dorado County. And now Ryan Groover is joining us. He's Director of Health and Human Services in Nevada County. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Beth. Thanks so much for having me back.
Why don't we start with fireworks? Because I think some changes have happened in your county in that regard.
Sure. So personal fireworks aren't allowed in Nevada County, throughout the county, and in parts of neighboring Placer County as well, due to the extreme fire danger. Obviously, there are concerns with shelter in place that more people will be looking to enjoy fireworks at home. And so there are conversations that are ongoing in terms of having the annual fireworks display in Grass Valley in some way that will allow people to enjoy that from their homes, from their vehicles and things like that, so that people can still have that, not have to do something, you know, in their backyards and yet avoid the gatherings that are so problematic in the COVID situation.
I've heard there was the idea of setting off fireworks at the airport, allowing that as an option, but I'm not sure that that was approved. Do you have an update?
I don't have an update on that. I apologize.
Okay. Meanwhile, let's talk about your COVID numbers and the spike that we have already addressed in previous conversations, but how much is it ongoing now?
Yeah, so our community did an amazing job sheltering in place and flattening the curve to the point where we didn't have a single case for the entire month of May. And then June came, and we started seeing new cases. And as of yesterday, we have 51 cases to date through June, bringing our total cases in Nevada County to 92. So as with the beginning, it started out in Eastern County, the Truckee area, and has since ticked up in Western County as well. 15 of our new cases are in Western County, 36 of them are in the Eastern County. In terms of age range, I know statewide and even nationwide, there people have seen a shift towards the younger demographic. We have always had 18 to 49 as sort of our largest category, but this recent spate of cases includes 8 children, while we had none in the initial run of cases. So last time we started seeing an increase as we were headed into the state shelter-in-place order, and this time we're in the midst of reopening. So I think everybody has to be cognizant of that. And no cases is an unrealistic goal. Instead, we need to look to the increase being gradual so that we can contain outbreaks and make sure we don't overwhelm the healthcare system. And so all the capacities that we kind of bought the time to develop through testing, contact tracing, and those things are playing a critical role right now in containing the new outbreaks that we're seeing.
So from zero cases in May to the jump you're experiencing right now, how much of it do you attribute to the reopening and the movement of people compared to testing?
Yeah, so I think it's a combination. There are certainly some in the beginning when testing was very tightly impinged and the criteria for getting a test due to the scarcity were pretty stringent. Now we're able to test people who are either asymptomatic or have mild symptoms, and so definitely some of the cases probably would have gone without a test early on. But it's certainly the case. We had testing through May as well, and with no cases, it's not just an uptick in testing that's leading to this. So what we're seeing is not necessarily that the cases are related to the reopened sectors, but rather the complacency that's come along with that reopening and with that spate of no, or that duration of no cases. So the clusters can be quite complicated to contact trace. We're seeing several instances of initial cases being related to travel and work environments, and then spread through, as your previous guest was saying, family gatherings and social gatherings, where even with people with symptoms have shown up. So I think it's, and then people going to work with symptoms as well. So I think it underscores the continued need to avoid intermixing outside of households, continuing to follow social distancing, absolutely stay home if you're even mildly symptomatic. I think we're all guilty of that. Well, it's just allergies when you have a sniffle, and these are not normal times. And so it's really important for people to stay home when they have even mild symptoms.
Ryan, I was around a family member who had a bit of a fever over the weekend, and that's why I've been hosting from home this week, not because we really have any clear, you know, risk or link to a direct COVID case, but it's so hard to know when do I truly be concerned, when am I okay, and I've just got to play it on the safe side. So I hear what you're saying.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And we all do. And I definitely appreciate your vigilance and hope that your listeners do as well.
Well, let me get back to the 8 cases of COVID in children. Can you give me ages so I understand where the cases have shown up?
So I don't have breakdowns to that level, but my understanding is that they're related to, as your previous guest was saying, again, the spreading through a family. So you have a positive case that was related to travel or a social gathering, and then it spreads to other people within that household. So while I don't have those ages, just to give you a sense of perspective, it's not from those children necessarily being somewhere for the most part, but rather their family members of a known case.
Okay, what about masks? Where's the county on the issue of face coverings and the governor's directive and enforcing it?
Yeah, so of course this has been a highly contentious and controversial move. At first, the science was quite mixed, but there has been emerging consensus that there are benefits in the aggregate to more people wearing masks. I'll say that I started wearing a mask pretty early on when the verdict was still out in terms of the science, and the reason was, observing the stress of, and concern of grocery store workers. So I thought to myself, if it makes the person working behind the counter feel better that I'm wearing a face covering, it's okay if my glasses are fogging up a little bit. So really, it's an act of compassion and community. And we had many businesses that reached out requesting there be an order so that they could protect their staff and customers, as well as giving the public a sense of security and patronizing their establishments. So I think the immediate headlines were around, you know, law enforcement statements that they were not going to enforce this, but I'll say that from the very beginning, for all the guidance and orders, the approach hasn't been for law enforcement to be out there writing tickets. It's something that has to come from the community and start with outreach and education. And I think where we'll have success, and where I've already seen success, frankly, in going to the stores, is when it's coming from the community and when it's coming from businesses.
All right. Well, there's a lot more to explore in this. I'm going to leave it right there for now. Ryan, thank you. Take care. Stay safe. Appreciate your time on Insight.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
And that was Ryan Groover, Director of Health and Human Services in Nevada County. Thank you to all the county public health directors across the region who have continued to be available to us and in conversation with us. And I have a few program notes for you. Today at noon, in a Facebook Live event that you actually have to find at the website, The Sacramento Press Club will have Cap Radio's healthcare reporter Sammy Kayola in conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci. A special panel discussion will follow, and we'll post a link to the Sacramento Press Club website. The event happens at noon. We're going to debrief with Sammy on Insight tomorrow. Also on tomorrow's show, a conversation I'll be recording this afternoon with Sam Sanders from NPR. His new show, podcast actually it is, It's Been a Minute with Sam Sanders, is coming to the Cap Radio lineup. Sam himself is always an uplift, so listen for that tomorrow as well. Now today, after a short break, I'll talk with Sacramento's former poet laureate and author, Indigo Moore. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.